Welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 151.
Woo!
And means we're at an original Pokemon now. Woo! I should count Mew, who I think's whatever. This week's show is super exciting, super, super Nintendo-ish. It's all about this past generation of gaming, so the Wii, the 360, the PS3, the DS, the PSP, the PCs, mobile gaming, smartphones, all that fun jazz. But before we get there, let's introduce our panel of expert gamer analysis. We have Adam Sessler as Trent.
I have all the attitude of Adam Sessler as well. Did you know that I cried for 2 hours over lunch today? I had no idea what my career was going. No offense
to Sessler. And out of retirement, we have Justin as End Guy Kroll.
Who?
He used to be a fixture on the one-up show, the one-up yours.
That guy, okay. I remember him.
He's sadly enough, like, the only black famous game personality I could think of off the top of my head, and I didn't want to compare you to the hip-hop gamer.
Don't know.
So, yes. Okay, so we're not fans of the hip-hop gamer here, but we are fans of games in general. Games, 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 games I do enjoy. You put your number on the table anyhow. We're here to talk about all the past 8 years of gaming and the next maybe 5 to 10 years of gaming here. So we're going to kick it off, I guess, since we haven't really had this discussion on the show much. What systems did you own in this past generation?
I owned all of them.
Do you still own all of them?
No, I got rid of my 360. I was in a weird funk for a while because the first system that I bought in this most recent generation was the 360. And before having a 360, I was a PlayStation gamer, and I didn't like the look of where the PS3 was going. I didn't like it, and I'm sure there's many people who weren't really jazzed about the PS3 in its first couple years of its life. But it didn't look like it was offering much, and it was more expensive, so I didn't jump on that train. So I figured I'll just buy a 360, and I did not regret it for a long time. But over the past two and a half years, I just stopped playing my console, and I love playing video games, and I love playing consoles in general. Like my TV is still stacked up with a whole bunch of retro machines, but I had just stopped playing my Xbox. So I realized that a lot of the games that I wanted to play of this current generation, the more hardcore games that were not on the Wii, that is, were on the PlayStation 3. So what I ended up doing was trading in my 360 and getting a PS3. And I got the 500 GB PS3 with the 1 year PlayStation Plus bundle. And I'm not going to lie, I love it. I love my PS3, I think, more than I ever did the Xbox 360. All respect to Xbox 360 gamers. Like, it was a fun space to play multiplayer games in. But in terms of exclusive content, I just feel more at home on Sony's console as of this past generation.
Okay. All right. What about you, Justin?
I got my first 360. It was the standard white one, I want to say, back in 2009-ish. It was a few years after Halo 3 came out. I sold it to a friend of mine to get one of the black 360s, the Elites, and then ended up selling that one too. So then I got one of the newer 360s when college rolled around, and I was able to get it like as bundled with my laptop.
You got into that deal.
Yeah.
I remember that. That was like 2010, 2011, around the time the Kinect came out.
Right. Except I didn't get a Kinect, though.
Nobody got a Kinect.
Yeah. As far as PlayStation, I always grew up a Sony boy, like Trent, but being $600 really wasn't doing it for me, especially when you've got no job. And you're a kid, it's hard to sell that to people. It's hard to sell it to your mom. Be like, hey, you should get me this $600 black thing.
That's what we call prostitution.
Of course, son.
Of course. No questions asked. But then I played, I think it was Infamous 1 on my friend's PlayStation. And after that whole PlayStation Network hacking back in 2011, when GameStop was selling the... Yeah, that was 2011.
Wow,
GameStop. I know. GameStop was selling PlayStation 3s at like $100 cheaper, I think. So I got one of those. I think I got Resistance 2, Infamous 1, and I want to say it was... I forget the third game. But those were the games that I got. And then I managed to win a contest on Twitter from an IGN guy and got a free year of PlayStation Plus. And then I renewed my subscription recently. And
okay.
I'm enjoying
it. Worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is worth it.
I don't know.
Like, PS Plus is so... I don't want to bait anybody, but PS Plus is so much better than Xbox Live. As far as
I want to name my baby. All I was going to interject with is when I was an Xbox gamer, the biggest trump that we had against those fanboys that were PlayStation gamers was that PSN. I mean, it wasn't easy to find your friends. There weren't a lot of games with great online capabilities. The content on the marketplace was not that awesome. So, like, the whole experience of Xbox Live from, like, I would say 2006 to 2011 was, like, there was no competition. It was by far the best. And I think PS Plus changed the game. I mean, it's a subscription-based service. It costs money. And it doesn't necessarily – you don't have to buy into it. But it makes – between the free games and the discounts you get on all the downloads that you want – and the extended trials and the extra content, it's just so worth it. And I feel like the ecosystem of PSN is great even if you aren't a PS Plus gamer. So I don't know. I feel like Xbox Live has really lost its luster over the past 2 years.
I will agree and kind of disagree at the same time. I agree that PlayStation Plus is a great service. I don't necessarily compare it to Xbox Live. I will say that over time, Xbox Live has become more of a scam once kind of PlayStation has hit parity. But I always kind of saw it as you were paying for quality. Because even now, Xbox Live is still a better experience than PlayStation Online. That might change in the next gen, but I still think that Xbox Live as an overall experience is better. That said... Like you said, PlayStation Plus is a great service as far as getting free games, but it's not a comparable service because they aren't charging you for anything necessary. They're just, it's kind of a reward system at that point. So I don't really compare it to Xbox Live. I'm kind of curious to see what becomes of both of them next gen when they're both charging for online and multiplayer. As far as I know, Sony is smart enough not to lack stuff behind a paywall, though, which I always hated about Microsoft. Like, I get the online multiplayer even if I don't necessarily like it. I don't get hide in Twitter or Facebook or SFM between a paywall.
Or Netflix.
Or Netflix, which you already pay for.
Yeah, social integration is not really great. The one thing that I will say, and I mean acknowledging the fact that I don't know what Xbox Live and PSN are going to look like moving forward, but the one thing that I was really disappointed in when it comes to Xbox One is the way the servers are set up. You can't... So if I'm playing Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn, on my PS4, like, I can play with PS4 gamers or PS3 gamers or PC gamers. And moving forward, if I were to play an online game that was also released on the PC, I would be able to, on my PS4, play with those people. But even if that same game is on the Xbox One, their server setup is such that they would not be able to play with PS4 gamers, and they would not be able to play with PC gamers. So it's just, that's the only thing that bothers me about the service moving forward. It restricts the population that you can play with in those massively online worlds to only people who have Xbox Ones, which I get has been the norm for Xbox Live so far, but I just feel like it's a wasted opportunity.
I guess this is a more recent development, but what do you folks think? I guess Trent doesn't even have an Xbox for this, but games with gold?
I've heard about it. I mean, basically the same thing as PlayStation Plus's willingness to give you free games, right?
As long as you're willing to accept games from like half a decade ago.
Right. Like, one of the first games that they put out was Assassin's Creed 3. Or 2, sorry. And more recently, they put out Halo.
Best game in the Assassin's Creed series.
Yes, but that game's also, like, nearly 5 years old. Like, yeah, if you haven't played it by, like, if you haven't played it by now. And keep in mind, this was also, like, a few months, I think, like, after they released it.
$5. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and, like, to be fair, you can also, like, find the entire Assassin's Creed Ezio trilogy for, like, I don't know, like, what, at least $20 by now at this point, right, for both systems.
Yeah, it's really cheap, and like you said, it is old that there was already Assassin's Creed 3, which I think Sony gave away Assassin's Creed 3 either the month before or the month after they gave away Assassin's Creed 2.
No, I don't think they've given... they probably did it in the UK, but I don't think they've
given Europe.
They haven't really given away Assassin's Creed 3. Not yet, at least.
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, it might have been Europe.
A super rad month for PS Plus gamers. Justin, I don't know. But
Hotline Miami?
The Hotline Miami was one of them. Sin Mora is another one. And
was it Dragon?
Dragon's Dogma. The Darkness Arisen, though. It's like the expanded Ultimate Edition of Dragon's Dogma, and we get it for free. Which is a game I always thought about picking up, but never really chose to. And Earl, we were having a conversation about this over Twitter the other day. One of the reasons why I like the idea of PlayStation Plus and Xbox Gold to a lesser extent is that they may be giving away free games, which may not be great for the ecosystem, as you put it. But if it makes a gamer who's always thought about getting involved into a series actually download a game and get invested in the IP, they're more likely to actually buy into the franchise in the future, I feel.
I get that discussion to a degree, but at the same time, I really do think it hurts certain games because, like you said, like you've been thinking about it, but you didn't buy it, and the game's been out for a couple of months now, right?
True. I only bought Heavy Rain today because I was in GameStop and there was a 2-for-20 deal and I already had a game worth $13.99 in my hand and Heavy Rain was there. Sean?
Jason!
Sean? I mean, I know Heavy Rain is a good game. I have friends that have been preaching the gospel of Heavy Rain forever. I've just never gotten around to picking it up because it's always been in the background. But sometimes when a deal is right there, you snatch it up. And if I like Heavy Rain, I'm probably going to buy Beyond Two Souls.
Yes, but I guess the difference here is you bought Heavy Rain. You might have bought it a couple of years in, and they might not even get profit, but you bought it. I do think, personally speaking, and I don't know, you know, I do think that there is a certain value people put towards actually spending money on something as compared to when they get it for free. Like, if you don't like it, or if you kind of aren't interested in it, you don't feel like you're wasting your money, so you're more likely to drop it. Like, it has its benefits, and it has its backsides as well. The other thing is, I also think that there are certain games, certain franchises that I think a lot of people don't buy because it looks like a quote-unquote PlayStation Plus title. One of the reasons I haven't bought PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale is because I feel like that's a title that's eventually going to be on PlayStation Plus.
Oh, yeah, totally. Let me counter the argument with, do you think that having, trials... like 1 hour trials where you can like get trophies and then have them unlock once you get the full game is also incentivizing people to get PlayStation Plus.
I think that's an idea. I'm kind of, you know, it's, I'm curious to see where they go with it, but yes, demos again are a double edged sword. And I think extended demos are as well. I do think it benefits a lot of games. There are certain games I don't think really demo well. I think RPGs are always guilty of this. It's hard to kind of get it
to be fair, though, they aren't demos. Like, if you go to the PlayStation Marketplace, there's a section for demos, and for PS Plus subscribers, there are extended trials. And the difference between the two is actually pretty significant.
Oh, no, I know. That's what he was saying, and I'm saying...
It's more like Redbox.
Yeah, it gives you an hour or 2 hours or whatever. And that's, you know, that's a nice thing. And then you can unlock it and continue your progress from there. That's a smart idea. And that's it. I'm a fan of PlayStation Plus. I'm just saying, I think giving away a handful of games every month does devalue some of your titles and some titles that go onto your platform. There's a lot of people, I mean, yes, so it's PlayStation 3 because it's a bit older. I know a lot of people who don't buy any games for the PlayStation Vita because of the instant game connection that you get with it. You get almost all the major retail titles at some point in time on that service for free.
I know.
So, how many of those games are you going to buy? Well, how many of those games do you think are going to get sequels for you to buy?
But I made this point to you over Twitter before too. These are not immediately released free. These are not extremely new games. The games that are put on the PS Plus for free are ones whose sales period, primary sales period, has passed. It has gone by, and then they are free for a month. And then they stop being free. And I know for a fact that Sony reimburses the companies that put them up as free games for that month. So the only one losing money in this instance is Sony, the company itself. And I would argue that just from having gamers get more involved in that PS3 ecosystem or playing their system more, they find value in it. So I really don't see any problems with it. And I don't really understand where you're coming from when you say it devalues games or it devalues series. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay, well, to kind of bring this back, because you mentioned the other thing I feel devalue games, is that we have this mentality that games have no value beyond their initial launch week. And it is what it is. It's the industry we live in. It's the reason why you can find a game for half off a month after it comes out. It's the reason why Sony gives it away for free. It's because you feel like once that period passed, there's no longer any value in buying it new because you kind of missed that boat. And I do think that's a problem the industry needs to address, because you can't, like, as we saw this generation, and this is one of the downsides of it, you can't survive on that boom or bust mentality that every game needs to be a hit out the gate. Because if it's not, it ruins a lot of companies. We saw something like 100 and some odd developers closed down this generation. And I guess to kind of bring them into the conversation, since we've kind of ignored them for the most part, the only person who really seems to have that figured out seems to be Nintendo. I don't know what it is they do. Maybe it's because they don't drop their prices often, so people are used to buying it at full price, but their games tend to keep their values the cost of the entire generation.
Well, part of that is the quality of the first-party development.
Right. And another thing is, they build their games to last. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, and they're kind of peerless in that respect. But mm-hmm. To be fair, I would argue that the problem with the game studio closures is not related to people getting free games. It's not related to hold on. It's not related to piracy. It's the only factor that's making studios close down is that there's no business case to stay open when AAA development requires tens of millions of dollars. So the whole fault is really placed on us pushing technology to a point where it's
I don't know about all that.
I kind of see what he's coming at. Is that
Triple H development has destroyed our industry. That's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and this goes back to what I was saying before, is that we exist in this boom or bust. You go big or you don't go at all. We kind of lost the mid-tier developers this generation. I think the biggest loss was THQ, which was a key of that, because they tried to chase that AAA bubble that they couldn't fight in. Right. So you pour in tens of millions of dollars into a project that has no chance of making it back, but you have to hope for that money because you can't make it.
And the sad thing is, THQ made some great games. Like, I've got Darksiders 2, Saints Row. These are all, like, fantastic games, but they just didn't sell as well as they could have. And I think part of that is, like, the problem with, the U-Draw and, like, constantly making...
They made a lot of bad calls. I feel bad for THQ because you're right. They were a mid-tier publisher who assumed that they were a mega publisher to the same degree that Square Enix and EA and Ubisoft and Activision were, and they were not. and they continued to funnel money, a lot of money, into projects that may not have been the most fit. Like, I can understand why the Wii had sold a lot of UDraw tablets, but that's because that is a family-oriented audience. Why they ever thought that making a whole bunch of UDraw tablets for the PS3 and the 360, which has a far more adult crowd, it is beyond me. And of course, they recognized that. It was a huge mistake, and really negatively impacted the company.
Yes.
But
the lawsuit took a lot out of that, too.
Yeah. And the critical reception of Homefront, I felt bad because you're right. Like, they had Red Faction. The Red Faction series was doing hot in terms of critical value. Not
necessarily Armageddon.
Homefront had a lot of commercial sales for what it was, but critically it didn't do well. Darksiders was great, but that's the thing. And they kept trying to build up certain franchises like The Blob, which was two great games, and Darksiders, which were two great games. Oh, yes, yes. They kept trying to build them up as a AAA series, and I liked them a lot, but they never garnered, like, Call of Duty-level audiences.
Right.
And that's just the sad reality of that situation. They aren't going to sell 3 million units. They aren't going to sell 6 million units. You'll be lucky if they sell 2 million, you know?
Yeah. This is going to sound a bit sad and a bit cruel, but I think the most highest-rated game that they ever sold was probably Saints Row 4.
But that's not damn.
I know, that's the joke.
Yeah. Well, and another thing is, like, I love, like, Metro Last Light is probably one of my favorite games of this recent generation. And a lot of the work that was done on that game was done at THQ. So I feel bad because, like, you can tell that this was a company that wanted to play the big boy game, but the reality of the situation.
They didn't know how.
Yeah. And it's just like our economy now. The middle class is shrinking. We have a group of indie developers that are doing fine and a group of mega developers which are bitching about how expensive it is to make games but are still continuing to make expensive games. And all of the smaller players that were able to compete by only investing $3 to $5 million into game development can't survive anymore because in order to justify the increased cost of development, they have to sell 1 million, 2 million, 5 million more units. And it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. The fact that Resident Evil 6, and I know it was, I understand the problems with Resident Evil 6. The fact that Resident Evil 6 can be considered a failure after selling 4.5 million copies is astonishing. Like, what kind of world do we live in?
Same thing with Square Enix and Tomb Raider, where $3 million wasn't enough for them to make their money back.
Right. It's like, do you know how many people would kill to sell 3 million copies of a game?
And that's the thing. If you go back a generation to the PlayStation 2, the GameCube, and the Xbox, 1 million, 2 million was that was a great selling title.
Right.
Now you sell 3-4 million titles, and you can't even break even.
Right. Yeah. Like, how many PS2 games, like, during the PS2 and Xbox era, like, sold over 1 million, do you think?
I mean, there were a handful of them, but if you go to multi-million sellers, it really collapses. And then if you want to go to those higher numbers, like 5 to 10 million, the only games that probably sold more than like 5 million were GTA and Gran Turismo. I don't think the original Halo sold that much, and I think maybe Mario Kart Double Dash. But that's about it. And yeah, I mean, the industry has exploded this generation. We have games selling 10, 15 million as a common thing, but those are super franchises. Assassin's Creed, Call of Duty. I don't want to say Battlefield yet because we've only had one so far for an example.
And even show age a bit.
I don't know. So when I say that AAA development has destroyed our industry, and Earl, I know that you have problems with the term AAA. That's exactly what I mean. I mean we are trying to take full advantage of technology, and development costs have not reduced yet, but we continue to push the bar, which makes games like Tomb Raider will never get a sequel because they only sold 3 to 4 million copies. And when you think about the logistics of a game never getting a sequel because it only sold 3 to 4 million copies, it just seems mind-blowing to me.
Okay, and just to briefly clarify, I do have a problem with the term AAA, but partially not necessarily because of AAA titles, but I always feel like AAA is applied incorrectly, because AAA should refer to a game's quality, not necessarily its budget, and we tend to refer to it as its budget, which is an odd conceit in gaming, in that we care more about how much money is poured into the project. Right. Than how much, you know, how good it actually turns out. Like, an example of this, kind of jumping ahead, and I don't want to hate on it, and I realize I'm going to sound like I am, but Titanfall is an example of that to me. It's like a game that's getting this huge hype. I don't know why. Not that it looks like a bad game, but it's like people have christened it the next coming, and it's just because it's from a studio that's pouring a lot of money into a first-person shooter.
Well, I mean, they do that every other day, though.
Yeah. Anyway, we went super tangential, but yeah, as much as I appreciate this recent game generation, and for the most part I feel like it was really good for gamers, I do feel like all the closures that are associated with it are because the business just isn't working in the model that people have grown accustomed to.
But people don't want to break that model, and that's the problem. But yes, it is.
Those of them that do break that model do it on the crux of DRM or DLC or microtransactions or breaking a game into episodic content. Like, it's really hard to find, like, where is the balance? Like, how much should really be paid for a game? How much extra content should be built into a game? And how much should be kept from the initial release? Because on the one side, there are the people who believe that a game needs to continue to make money outside of the $60 price tag, which I understand. But at the same time, a lot of DLC out there feels like it rightfully should have been packed in the initial release.
Yeah. But it is a really odd thing, because I do feel like this generation, as you said, was a good generation, but there was a lot of negative attached to it. I think, you know, we kind of mentioned the AAA model not being something sustainable, but something that nobody else knows how to break out of. And we've also had the emergence of DLC and microtransactions. But I do, you know, like, there were some positive experiences, and I do want to focus on some of those. We already kind of mentioned one with PlayStation Plus. I think that's a great... I like the idea of rewarding consumers. I think, you know, I like PlayStation Plus. I think one that doesn't get enough credit sometimes is Club Nintendo. I mean, partially because it's Nintendo and they are kind of backwards at times with certain things. But I do like the idea of kind of earning points to get rewards that you kind of want. Granted, yes, it isn't always the most interesting things in North America for whatever reason, with Japan and Europe just rolls over us. But, you know, they've recently added that digital games, and you kind of get a reward if you buy a certain amount of products at the end of the year. Some of them aren't that great.
I don't feel like it's not the same beast, though. Like,
oh no, it's not the same beast. I just mean that as far as rewarding consumers for being a loyal consumer, it's kind of like a reward program in a store or something. You know, like, spend $250 at Best Buy, you get $5 back. It's not much, but it's something.
But the something that you get, and I know this because I'm in the Nintendo Club. Like, sometimes the rewards are okay. Like the cradle for the 3DS LX. Yeah, the extra large. And that's fine, but a lot of the times it's like, oh, which of these 5 posters do I want to pick? You know?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, compare it to some of the stuff like they get in Japan, where they get like Super Nintendo controllers, they get like a Mario Galaxy or Zelda soundtrack, they get like a Luigi pin, and we just kind of get, like, some of the stuff they give is really high quality. Like, I didn't expect them, but I really enjoyed the playing cards they gave you as a platinum reward a couple years ago. High quality cards. So high quality, I actually don't want to use them to play cards with. But the Super Mario statue they gave a couple years ago, stuff like that. But yeah, a lot of their rewards are kind of hit or miss. But at the same time, it's not like you're forced to buy anything. Like, you can just kind of hoard your points until something comes along. A lot of the points I've used recently have just been for digital games. Like, I got Fluidity for the Wii. This week, I got Dungeon and Western for the 3DS. If you want, they're giving out A Link to the Past and Metroid. So I think that, you know, it is a service that can improve. But again, it's a nice kind of loyalty program. So it is that. Square Enix does something similar as well, but I honestly don't buy enough Square Enix games to...
Do you know if Ubisoft does anything with their Uplay?
Other than drive people insane?
I mean, besides that. They're phasing that out now, too. I think starting with Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, they're going to, I think they're grandfathering it in some weird way, but they're going to stop using the Uplay thing because they didn't find it was working.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I guess partially due to the complaints about Assassin's Creed knocking out single-player content.
If you didn't have an online pass.
Online passes were another big pain in the ass, but what can you do?
Yeah.
well, it's like, as much as people give EA shit for that, I'm glad that they decided to release that online pass stuff for free later on, instead of just kind of phasing it out completely.
Here's the thing. I feel like, and actually, the creators of the Witcher series were recently talking to the press about this. There's no real point to having an online pass or a DRM system. If people want to pirate your game, they're going to pirate your game. That's just the reality of the situation. And they got away with it. And every single countermeasure that's ever been introduced by like Temco or by EA or by Ubisoft, like, good on you for trying, but the reality of the situation is that it's not making as much of a dent as you want to, and all you're really doing is inconveniencing the people that actually bought the game.
And pissing people off.
I remember playing Dragon Age 2 and thinking, why is it already asking me to put in a whole bunch of codes and stuff? Like, the goal for me was to play this game offline on my home console, and actually, it's caused a lot of problems because... I know people who bought Dead or Alive 5. That's the recent one, right? And it had an online pass system attached to it, so that if you were playing it on your own, on your console, offline, it wouldn't work. You would need to be online in order to enter the code, and then you can play offline, solo. But if you bought the game, and let's say you just don't have internet, you're fucked. You just wasted your purchase.
Are you serious?
So, yeah, it's awful. And of course they didn't apologize for it because that's the measure, you know? But it's awful in my opinion.
Do you remember when the Sin City fiasco broke out? And then I think some hackers, or I guess not hackers, but PC players found a way to make it so that the game actually could work without the DRM and basically invalidated their entire reasoning for it?
Yeah. Yeah, color me surprised.
if you really want to pirate something well enough, you'll find a workaround. Usually the workarounds are, like, I'm sure people found a way to play The Sims and all that other stuff. It's annoying, but a lot of people are phasing it out because I guess it just didn't. It either didn't stop piracy at the rate they wanted it to, or they weren't getting enough money to really warrant the inclusion of it. So I'm happy to see that something that stays exclusive to this generation.
Hopefully.
I guess kind of in a better note, what were some of your favorite developers or publishers this generation?
I think one of my favorite, well, I guess I have three favorite publishers. I think, are we talking like first party or third party?
Publishers, somebody who publishes games.
I think if I had to name three of my favorites, it'd probably be in no order, EA, Ubisoft, and Sony.
EA, that's an interesting one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is like they're not perfect, but I mean, they did, obviously.
Voted America's first company 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, they at the end of the day, they still do make some great games, and I enjoyed like Battlefield and Mass Effect and Dragon Age.
Fair enough.
I don't really like... all the annualization that they do with Assassin's Creed, but Ubisoft does still make awesome games like Far Cry and Assassin's Creed, and that Prince of Persia reboot that no one bought.
I really like that reboot. Okay, the cel-shaded one? Are we talking about the same one?
Yeah.
It was just called Prince of Persia? Great game. 100%.
Yeah,
and screw the world for not buying it.
Right, fuck the world. another one up there would probably be 2K for Borderlands and XCOM.
Okay.
Because, dude, XCOM is so amazing. It's like, it's fun.
I've heard good things about it, and, you know, a strategy game are doing so well in this generation, in this time, and which is, you know. But hey, I have to say, I am a huge fan of Ubisoft. I think they are my favorite third-party publisher. I think partially because as much as they do analyze their franchise, they do tend to have a variety. Like, their two biggest franchises are Assassin's Creed and Just Dance. I mean, those are really kind of polar opposites of the gaming spectrum.
True. There is Rayman and Splinter Cell.
They tend to have a really decent balance of the quote-unquote core and casual games, for lack of a better term, and for simplification's sake.
And they're really getting big out there with, like, the cross-media stuff, too. Because, like, they're trying to do movies, TV shows, books, all that stuff.
Well, I know they have a Rabbids TV show on Hulu.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. Is that? I know that one also has some type of Kinect functionality coming
with
it. They showed that at E3 or something, right?
Maybe.
But yeah, I like them. I think Sega's been pretty decent this generation as well, even if they've been a little over-reliant on Sonic. You know, stuff like...
What else do they have?
Stuff like Alpha Protocol, they did Mad World, they did Bayonetta, they did Vanquish.
Hey, did you see how terribly Lost World did in Japan? Andy,
How bad?
It sold just over 2,000 units.
Jeez.
Well,
2,000.
To be fair, for some reason, Sonic isn't that popular in Japan anymore.
Oh, I wonder why. Maybe because half the games that are released lately are shit.
Yeah, it does seem to have fallen off around the time of Sonic Adventures. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, they had to deal with Platinum, which gave them a lot of interesting games this generation. Sonic Colors and Sonic Generations, I think, are the two best 3D Sonic games to date.
Yes.
You know, I've sung the praise of Alpha Protocol way too often. I'm a huge fan of House of the Dead Overkill.
I really don't like Alpha Protocol.
Are you getting a Typing of the Dead?
I might, but I heard it's the same game. So
that's bad.
Well, I already own the game.
Well, you know,
buy it again.
Yeah,
I should have got it. It was $10. I should have got it then. We'll see. What else? They did a lot of stuff this generation, and they did a couple of stuff in PC gaming as well. I think Total Rome. I've not played them. I've heard people are huge fans of Yakuza games.
Oh, did you play the latest Total game?
No.
I think it was Total Rome, actually. There's Shogun. What was the... Yeah. Oh, yeah, the most recent one they launched, I only got to play like an hour of it, and I thought it was broken. So I really hope that they patch it.
They did. What else did they do? Well, yeah, I mean, Sega's up there.
Was it Company of Heroes, right?
Maybe. Like I think a lot of IPs also changed hands this generation. And they also did a couple of reactions. They did, like, the, I don't like how they brand Sonic. Like, the Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing and Sonic and Sega All-Star Tennis and Sonic.
Mario and Sonic
and,
at the Olympics.
Well, that's different. I mean, you want to have Mario and Sonic in the title because, well, granted, we got that this generation. And I could tell you, my 5-year-old self, if you told me Mario and Sonic were going to team up, never a million years, but I assume it would be an Olympic tie-in product.
Why are they in the Olympics anyway?
Because it makes money. I believe the first one sold something close to 15 million copies.
Jesus Christ.
That's the only reason they're in the Olympics. I mean, that's the only reason they continue to go to the Olympics.
I guess so.
It's one of those. And the thing is, it's not even like, I mean, yes, Wii Sports is a huge game, but that was a much more fully fleshed out sports game than Sonic and Mario. Mario and Sonic, or whatever. Any other developers?
I gotta say, I'm surprised that you put Alpha Protocol on there. I never would have thought that was your kind of game.
Well, I mean, I mean, if you were, I've always sung the praise of Alpha Protocol.
I didn't like Alpha Protocol because
you were,
I don't. Here's the thing, I like the branching paths that the plot takes. I don't know. It has a lot of good ideas. The problem with it for me is that it's a third-person shooter with a reticle that allocates whether you hit something or not to dice rolls. Like, if you're giving me a spot to shoot in and you're putting a gun in my hand and I shoot someone directly in the face and I see the bullet go in the head and blood appear, don't tell me it was zero damage. fuck your dice. That's broken gameplay.
Yeah, I will completely agree with you. I'm not going to defend it on a purely technical basis. It has some shortcomings in that department, but I think the overall experience and some of the key aspects, I think like the odd choice rule, I thought was very well integrated, especially compared to something like Mass Effect. And I am personally biased towards the spy genre. I'm a huge fan of it. So yes, my personal bias counted that as well, but it was a really fun game. I am just disappointed that they didn't get a sequel to iron out all of those technical issues, because I think it could have been a really fun game.
Could have been, yeah. I don't know. My favorite, I would say my three favorite publishers, and this is because I'm a bit of an RPG fan, are Square Enix, even though they made a lot of mistakes. Ignition, because they publish the most random games, and Exceed, because they find all the really awesome Japanese games that would never have a chance of making it over here based on their original publishers, and they publish them on their behalf.
I'm surprised. Why no love for Atlas?
What?
Why no love for Atlas?
Oh, I've never been an Atlas person.
Really?
And I know a lot of... Here's the thing. A lot of the people that I write with are really into Atlas. I get that. And they're also really into NIS, and I get that. It's just those games, I don't know. They're a bit too hardcore for me, I guess. It's not my... The aspects of the games that they create are just not really my thing.
Fair enough. I did try Shin Megami Tensei 4 recently. It was okay, but it is a really... It's like a... I mean, people use the term adult Pokemon, which I always think is a weird term, but it's okay.
I mean, well, it's a dungeon crawler, so...
Yeah. It was interesting, guys. It was my first experience with the franchise, and it kind of has that old-school Dragon Quest. You can't see your heroes, you just kind of face the enemies and fight. So yeah, because I am who I am, and this just goes without saying, a huge fan of Nintendo's output this generation. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but they continue to be the, in my opinion, best game company in the world.
It's quite the bold statement.
Well, I mean,
that is bold.
Personally speaking, my top three games of this generation were all Nintendo first-party titles. The two Galaxy games and Xenoblade Chronicles. In addition to that, they do have a very diverse lineup of titles. They resurrected a lot of interesting...
Animal Crossing.
I don't get Animal Crossing. I will never get Animal Crossing.
Really? I thought that you would have gotten Animal Crossing.
No, I'm not into Animal Crossing at all. Not even close. But yeah, other stuff. I was a huge fan of the Punch Out Revival. Skyward Sword, Twilight Princess, Smash Brothers Brawl. Even though some people say Netcode was broken as hell, which pissed me off. Stuff on the DS, Pokemon Black and White, Pokemon Diamond, Pearl, and Platinum. Mario and Luigi Spouses Inside Stories, New Super Mario Brothers U, New Super Mario Brothers, not New Super Mario Brothers, yes, we don't really count that one. Kirby's Epic Yarn, The Last Story was okay-ish. It was a great idea for an RPG. It was one of the few games I played on the Wii where I was really like, I wish this was on the system. I always hate this question, and I know it makes me a terrible video game fan, because I don't always pay attention to specific developers. I know I should. But I guess if I'm going to throw it out, I'm going to go with EAD Tokyo first, and Mario Galaxy 1 and 2. Naughty Dog, Uncharted 2, parts of Uncharted 1 and 3. Who else is there? Platinum Games. Even though not the most technically competent developer in the world, Grasshoppers. Who else do we have?
Okay.
What about you? I'm going to think on this. All
right. Me personally, I think I'd go with Insomniac for the most part. BioWare, whatever Ubisoft team did Far Cry.
Well, at this point, I believe you can say every Ubisoft team. I believe all of them work on every game they release.
All right, I'll just go with Ubisoft in general. Firaxis for Far Cry. The little developer tag team for Project X on the 3DS. And Rocksteady for the Batman games. Oh, and Sucker
Punch. How did I forget Rocksteady? Now, Rocksteady was a fun story this generation. Now, that was a good story, because I remember when Batman Arkham Asylum was I remember when that game was announced, and I had no confidence whatsoever that game was going to be good. Even after, I played the demo. I'm like, okay, this is going to be interesting, but it probably won't be great. But the fact that it was a Game of the Year contender to a lot of people, I was just so impressed with that game. But yeah, they did have one game before Batman, which is why a lot of people weren't expecting much from them, because usually you don't put most studios don't come from obscurity to kind of knock it out on their, I guess, second effort. I think the only other people would probably be Rockstar with Grand Theft Auto 3, because I think before that, the game wasn't bad, but I think the game before that was like an N64 platformer. But yes, phenomenal turnaround. They followed it up with Arkham City to prove that it wasn't a fluke and a one-off. And I'm kind of curious to see what they have in store for the future. What about you, Trent?
Irrational Games would be one of my favorite developers from this recent generation. I was a huge System Shock 2 fan, and I honestly did not expect BioShock. And when it came out, I fell in love with it. I actually have a tattoo because of BioShock. I was a huge fan of BioShock Infinite, and I look forward to playing Burial at Sea in the near future, too. So they're one of the developers that really popped out for me this recent generation. Outside of that, I think I'm only starting to really understand the value of Naughty Dog and Insomniac Games. I'm not a Resistance fan, but I've just started to really get into the Ratchet & Clank games, and I feel like they filled the void that's been missing in me ever since Banjo and Kazooie. And in terms of, Naughty Dog, after playing Uncharted and The Last of Us, I'm really excited to see what they do next, so.
Yeah. Good picks all around. I'm trying to think of if we missed any that somebody might be pissed about. I guess Rockstar.
Volition.
I feel like it's so, because as much as I love Saints Row, I think it only became a thing with the third game. And yeah, half is still great, I guess they would count.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but they also did Red Faction.
Any others, I guess kind of switch it up, because we don't talk about this and we haven't talked about this, and I do want to mention it. What about indie and digital download games? What were some of your favorites? What were your thoughts on that scene?
What?
what were some of your favorite indie or digital downloaded games of this generation?
Favorite indie games? I was a big fan of pretty much everything released by Zeboid Games. Cthulhu Saves the World, Breath of Death 7, The Reckoning? The Awakening? I don't know. Breath of Death 7 was great. And of course, their work on the Penny Arcade games is fantastic too. I was a big fan of Supergiant. I still am, obviously. Bastion was a great game, and I'm really excited to see what happens with Transistor. I got to play it at PAX East this year, so I'm expecting a lot of big things. I liked Fez. I know it's a polarizing game, so not everyone liked it. I liked Fez a lot. I'm not surprised that Fez 2 wasn't happening, and I'm not surprised that Phil Fish kind of fucked off. If you saw Indie Game the movie, that would not you would realize how neurotic and emotional and kind of narcissistic he is. So, not to say too many mean things about someone I don't know, but it did not surprise me that he decided to cancel the game after one negative exchange.
It wasn't one negative exchange.
It was a lot of negative things. But I want to ask you guys something. Do you guys think that this generation was also the one where a lot of, not necessarily bad things, but a lot of shit got called on?
Yes and no. I think part of it was just that social media has become more integral to our lives, so it's a lot easier for people to kind of be vocal about things they dislike. I think that a lot of consumers, like a lot of it was positive, a lot of it was negative. You know, stuff like the PlayStation outage had a positive effect. PS4 no DMR had a positive effect. The Mass Effect 3 ending had a positive effect. Then you had stuff like the Phil Fish thing. You had stuff like the ocean marketing stuff from last year. You know, the notion that we get up in arms about everything, and I'm not saying that everything's not a cause worth fighting for, but if you do kind of get upset about everything, it makes it marginalize anything because everything's like the world's ending.
That was my go-to response to any negative news I heard, that the world was ending.
What?
Everything. The Wii U's poor performance, the Vita's
the world's ending.
THQ closing down, Shadow of the Eternals failing. Pretty much every response I had was, oh my god, the world is ending. I'm being I don't actually mean that. But yes, the internet likes to go to extremes, and I agree with Earl. It's a lot easier to voice your opinion, and generally speaking, when people are looking for a soapbox, Twitter or Facebook or wherever is usually the first place they go. As much as I feel bad for developers like for instance, the guy who works on the Call of Duty games, like one of the people whose job is to balance the gameplay.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, he made one subtle tweak to how fast a gun reloaded and suddenly got death threats. That's taking things to extreme. There again, the audience that he's working with, I can kind of understand why they would approach the situation like that. That being said, the whole Phil Fish thing, yeah, I think that he was overdramatic in it. I fully acknowledge that he got a lot of criticism to the same effect. I think he kind of deserved a bit of criticism. And the long and the short is, if you're going to release something, if you're going to be in the public eye, you need to accept the heat or stay out of the kitchen. And he left the kitchen. That's fine for him.
And
that's
I think the problem with that thing was, too, is that he sort of kind of helped instigate it a little bit by the way he was acting. Like, I understand that you're getting into an argument, but like telling someone to go kill themselves, that's not cool.
He was always like that though. I saw him at PAX the year before too when they were first like demoing, and this is after this is 5 or 6 years after Fez was initially announced and received a whole bunch of early awards for its art style. Like when he was actually demoing it, just overhearing him talk to other journalists that were on the floor, he was really rude. There was a lot of awkward pauses where you could tell he was judging the person he was talking to. And I feel like it's so easy to be an artist, like an auteur, I should say. Like the type of person who takes their art seriously and cherish it and values it. And it's okay to cherish it and value it, but you need to understand that the way that other people approach it is never going to be the way that you're going to approach it. And he's the type of person to get offended because not everyone sees the things the same way he does. So, yeah, I feel like if you can't handle the industry, then stay the fuck out of the industry.
Well, I agree and I disagree to an extent. You do need a tough skin if you're a public figure in any industry. But at the same time, there's also a reason why I guess developers and artists kind of tend to have a PR rep to kind of be their go-between, because it can be fragile. No, people do have fragile egos. But it's not like it wasn't a one-off deal. It was something that he had to deal with often, and this was a huge. This was like a week-long event with him, Marcus Baer, Kevin Dent, and some other people. So it wasn't one argument. It was, and I think that was the other thing that came out of this generation.
I would have to agree with Justin, because as much like the long and the short is, the person that was saying, like Marcus, I feel like, okay, he's recently gotten into some heat from people based on the comments that he had on resolutions, and like a whole bunch of people were willing to crucify him over Twitter, and at that point I was like, that's not cool. But he's the type of personality who has made a living being argumentative, being opinionated, and I get that. He is an editorialist. He's not a journalist. He's not an industry pundit. He's not an analyst. He's the type of person that voices an opinion, and he has a job because he's controversial. That's how it is. So the response to him making critical statements about whatever you're doing is not to respond that you hope that they kill themselves. And that's where I have to kind of side with what Justin was saying. As much as I understand why people can take things personally, and that the way that Marcus approached that situation with Phil was extremist, it's don't approach it that way. That should never be your response. And that was his response. And he didn't cancel Fez 2 because he said he canceled Fez 2 because he said that, and the internet tried to crucify him for saying it, essentially.
Well, I was going to say, I think if
Marcus had said that about Phil and Phil not reacted as he should have, it would have blown over. No one would have given a shit what Marcus said, and Phil would still be working today. But instead, he took an extremist reaction, and the internet didn't like it. And I think justifiably so.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think that was the social media is both a blessing and a curse, because it gives you access to a lot of people, but it also gives you access to a lot of people. And I think one of the things that came out this generation, at least to me, is kind of the disconnect between like the gaming industry, the media folks, and the gaming community. There just seems to be a huge because you tend to have a lot of people who don't know how to speak in 140 characters. 140 characters isn't a lot, and sometimes what you want to say doesn't make sense if you crop it down to that. And I think a lot of people just kind of go for a really brief message that sometimes rubs the wrong way. At the same time, I do think there is a huge push against consumers from the gaming press, because gamers as a collective can be a bit difficult at times, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Because if you ever follow Justin on Twitter, Justin usually pops up every once in a while, like, what's the gaming big controversy today? And usually there is something going on.
Well, I mean, it's like, can you blame me when I ask that, though? Because it feels like, especially this year, it's like every other week something's happened. Like, someone's been told to go kill themselves, or someone says that, like, their livelihood is being ruined, or, like, someone said something about, like, freaking resolutions. It's like, if you asked me to name, like, 10 big gaming controversies from this year, I'd probably just be like, I'd probably have to, like, go through an entire calendar, like, every day of the week.
Yeah, but that's actually the funny thing, I think, is that if you, like, most of them I can't remember anymore, because they were kind of, like, I guess what Trent said with, like, Phil Fish, is like, if, you know, it's like one and done. Once you kind of get past it, it's like, whatever. A lot of it were also related to the fact that we were ramping up for next gen, and a lot of that stuff was just kind of speculation, rumors, and hearsay that just kind of built and built, and as, you know, as facts came out, that stuff just kind of fell off the wayside. And there are, you know, and most of it still centers around the next generation of consoles, because, you know, like what we have now, and this is I have a lot of pet peeves with the gaming industry. My newest one is the fact that they use historical terms for minor things, because right now we're in the middle of quote-unquote resolution gate. Usually when you use gate for controversy. It's some presidential scandal that we have in this country. Not that, oh, something that's 720p and something that's 1080p.
Okay, really quick. Do you guys care about this stupid resolution at all?
No, 1,000 times no. I think this whole resolution is a big deal? I don't know. Okay, I feel like there are those of us who play video games and enjoy video games, and we're eclectic in the video games we play, and we play them because we enjoy the gameplay. The graphics are nice, the audio is nice, but on the whole, we're there because we actually enjoy the experience itself. Whereas there are a lot of people who have kind of picked sides, like I'm a PlayStation gamer or I'm an Xbox gamer, and the crux of their argument is whatever minute details they differ on. So what? Like the PS3 runs at 1080 for one game and the Xbox runs at 720 for one game. Apparently that gives leverage to the PlayStation gamers to act like dicks to the Xbox gamers. But you know what? Those gamers are Call of Duty gamers in the first place. So, I mean, like,
This is one of the problems that I had. Cliffy B wrote something where it's like gamers want like games to be like higher resolution and look beautiful on HD TV. It's like, no, we don't want that. We just want them to be fun. Shut up, you're stupid. It's like, I don't care how good a game looks. If it's fun, then it's fun, and that makes it a great game. Like, that's one of the problems that I have with like games that try to look like super pretty, like Grand Theft Auto. It's like, I don't care how much money you spend on your graphics. If you're not fun, then you're not a good game.
I would argue that that's not even true anymore, because people do play games for the quote-unquote experience. I mean, there are certain games now which I don't think are necessarily fun, but they can kind of affect you in certain ways. I think the one that comes to mind, I can't remember the name, it's a indie game on Steam where you, like, you're a passport agent.
Papers, Please.
Papers, there we go. Stuff they Don't Starve, and you know, a lot of games that kind of have that. But yeah, at the crux of the argument is basically it's an e-penis measuring contest, because it shows without a shadow of a doubt that the PlayStation 4 is much stronger than the Xbox One, and that's really all people are using it. Because at the end of the day, most people won't care, most people won't notice the difference, most people won't concern themselves with this in a year. I would even say in a couple of months. It's something that people at launch are concerned with. Because off the top of your head, can you tell me any games that ran at 1080p this generation?
No.
I
don't even think I'd notice.
I don't think it matters. Like everyone is so hung up. Like, here's the thing. As long as it's not running at 10 frames per second, I don't really give a shit. The whole resolution race thing, just, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, these are aesthetics. Like, I still play 8-bit games, though, you know?
It's like when people try to bring up console wars. It's like, we're all sitting on our asses playing, like, things that are, like, up to $60. Are you really going to try and, like, measure, like, how much you paid to play the thing that you're playing right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did find out this generation that there are people who literally cannot go back to games from previous generations.
How?
Because there are people who kind of, and you know, right or wrong, I mean, it's their opinion, it's their view, who do think a quality of a game with its graphics. They have a standard, and they can't kind of regress beyond that. And, you know, it is their prerogative. To me, and I think this goes for any medium. The greatest test of all is the test of time. And if you cannot go back and play a game from 10 years ago, it's not saying it's a bad game. It just means that maybe it wasn't as great of a game as you thought it was.
That's exactly right, though, because I recently have played a whole bunch of PlayStation titles, and some of them were noted as being really beautiful looking, and that's why they got high review scores, and that's why they were really well received, and they sold a lot of units. But the gameplay doesn't hold up, and of course they don't look good looking today. So I feel like if a game is only a pretty face, it's not going to stand the test of time. So
right.
I just appreciate a good looking game. The greater focus should always beyond gameplay. Make it something worth playing, or make the plot worth actually being engaged in, you know? This is why I'm not a fan of Call of Duty either. I just don't see the point.
Like, you can make anything. It's like these days you can make anything look pretty, but it takes a lot of effort to make a game fun. You know what I mean?
Well, it shouldn't take a lot of effort to make a game fun with itself, which should be part of the problem, I guess. But I guess since we are kind of getting up there in time and we are kind of on this discussion, I'm kind of curious, what are your takeaways for next generation? What would you like to see evolve and change, and what would you... And then I guess, you know, okay, then we'll do this and then we'll wrap it up with the other question.
So, what we want to see?
Like, yeah, stuff you want to see in the next generation.
I know it's not going to happen, but I don't really want as much social integration as we're getting. Like, the game catcher stuff, that's cool. Not so much, like, the little following thing that you can do for statuses on the Xbox One. Because I don't feel like that's necessary.
People use them, then that's good for them. But, I mean, yeah.
It's like, I don't like Raptor. That's one of the reasons why, because someone's always updating their status like every 5 minutes. Be like, so-and-so is playing Lego Marvel Super Heroes. It's like, I don't care.
I hate when people integrate that with their Twitter so much. It's empty tweets. So-and-so has been playing Lego Marvel Super Heroes for the last 24 hours.
It's so dumb.
But I will say, I am interested in the social aspects. I do want to see... I do like the social integration. I think stuff like Miiverse and, you know, like being able to stream your games is kind of cool. But I do agree. I don't want it to be forced onto me.
Right. I don't want, like, any gimmick... I'm pretty much done with, like, things like motion controls and 3D gaming. That can go...
They had their time for the sun.
I was happy that you caught yourself and did not say gimmicks, because I really—that's another. I have a lot of pet peeves with the gaming industry. I was about to say
gimmick, but then like they kind of evolved into their own thing, so I guess you can't really call them that anymore.
Yeah, I hate gimmick. How gimmick is a catch-all for things we don't like or things we aren't familiar with. Motion gaming, mobile gaming, touchscreen gaming, 3D gaming—all gimmicks.
I also hope that we see less annualization.
I would hope so, but I doubt
I hope we see less annualization with some franchises with name like franchises whose names rhyme with Kamasin Seed. I don't know.
Nothing from Trent.
No.
I mean, the biggest thing is, like, the one thing that I would really want out of the next generation is a greater highlight on indie gaming and more backwards compatibility, I guess. Like, I like the fact that you can go on PSN and download PS Classics and PS2 Classics. But I'm really hopeful that with the Gaikai support, they'll be able to make a wide variety of the Sony back catalog games available. That's what I would love to see, because that was my biggest complaint with the PS3 as it is now. I love my PS3. I would much rather have this PS3 than a launch PS3. But I would also like to play PS2 games on it. That would be nice.
Yeah. I don't get why did they take that feature out for the newer PlayStations? Is it because of PS Classics?
What, backwards compatibility?
Yeah.
Price, I assume. Remember, you both know that at the start of this podcast, the PlayStation 3 was $600 at the start of this generation, and right. I imagine they were just trying to strip away any features that would save them money here and there. And backwards compatibility is something that most. I mean, it seems like all of the publishers would tell you isn't worth the effort because of I think Microsoft or Sony said like only 5% of consumers actually uses it. So.
Oh well.
I would like to see the return of mid-tier games. I don't necessarily think we're going to. But I do think a lot of companies, a lot of publishers don't have that diversity anymore where you kind of have, like, you can kind of tell everybody's lineup. When somebody says, oh, we have 10 games in development, like, you just, like, EA, you're like, oh, it's Madden, it's FIFA, it's Call of Duty, it's Battlefield. it's stuff like that. Or if Sega says it's a Sonic game and it's a Total Rome game, Ubisoft says it's Assassin's Creed, it's Just Dance, Activision is Call of Duty, it's Skylanders. So I would like to see, those smaller titles kind of make a return. And I think, especially being that, and I like digital, so this is going to sound weird, but I do hope that it's also not necessarily always digital, because I do think it's going to get really sad and boring if I walk into a video game store and literally I go to the wall and it's nothing but a Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, Madden, and FIFA's. Because those are the titles that are coming out on retail, aside from the first party exclusive titles.
No, I get that, and that's something that I hope too. Because as much as I kind of like the idea of day one downloads, I don't see myself using it that much in as far as the near future, and I don't want it to be the end all be all.
Okay. As for my final question, I guess, and this is kind of related. If you were to give a piece of advice to Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo going into this next generation, and Nintendo's already kind of there, they are there, what would it be?
For Microsoft, know exactly what your thing is supposed to do. And stick with your words. For Sony, do what you do. And I don't know much about Nintendo, so you guys do what you do, too.
Trent?
Any words of wisdom? Is that what you're asking?
Sure.
I would say I'm okay with Microsoft not sticking to their words if sticking to their words makes their platform horrible. I'm okay with PlayStation kind of changing their approach, because I haven't gone through like the 170-point facts that they released about the system, but apparently there's a lot of details in there that are unpleasant. So I'm hopeful that the PS4 is everything I want it to be, and that by the time I get one, probably sometime in mid-2014, it's a good place to be. And for Nintendo, I mean, I want to see the Wii U do well, but they really need to push harder to market its value to the market, and its difference from the original Wii. And the more games, the better, I feel. I'm really hopeful that the Wii is going to have a comeback this Christmas, to be honest.
Yeah. As for me, I guess for Microsoft, my advice would be, I honestly think Microsoft should do what they're doing now, and that sounds weird because a lot of people are against them for it. But they are smart. You don't necessarily need a robust first party lineup if you can just kind of get games on the system exclusively, so they can work with third parties and kind of get those. Like Rise isn't a first party game, neither is Dead Rising 3, but it is something to go move forward with. I do think they need to have a more diverse lineup though, because especially for the last couple of years, it has really just been Halo, Gears of War, and Fable in rotation, and I guess Forza as well now. And that's pretty much their staple of franchises. And for a console that has been treated as first place for the past 8 years, it seems like it really, not that it doesn't have momentum going to the next gen, but it seems like it should have been more. It should have been more to cement their place in the industry. Because if Microsoft was to go away tomorrow, I don't think I'd miss them.
That's fair.
As for Sony, I think Sony, I would offer them the opposite advice. I think they need to focus more on games. And I know really? They do nothing but games, but I mean focus on the fact. Sony to me is kind of like throw something at the wall, hope it sticks as far as video game releases go. I mean, they release a lot of games, which is great as a consumer, but almost all of them, like half of them go unnoticed or unhyped because they're just kind of thrown out there. Stuff like Puppeteer, stuff like Ratchet and Clank, which comes out 3 days before.
Oh, yeah. So we all agree that that's going to die, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I like Insomniac, but that game is not going to do as well as they're probably hoping for.
Well, one thing that's confusing me about it is that it's priced at like $29.99.
Yep.
So, what's going on? Is it not a full game?
It is, but it's a full
game. They say it's a full game, but I guess like they want it to be cheaper because it's also got one of their downloadable games too.
For being really blunt, ever since All for One, the games have kind of not been up to the par that they were once, you know? So I was really hopeful that before the Nexus, it is called Before the Nexus, right?
Into the Nexus.
Before the Nexus is the mobile tie-in.
Okay. I'm really hopeful, decent, but I don't know. It's the last future series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I hope that if they do bring it into PS4, it is as great as Up Your Arsenal or some of the the future games.
I think this is going to be the swan song for Insomniac, actually.
Well, as far as, I think so. And I think, you know, we've already kind of seen what a non-Insomniac Ratchet & Clank game does.
I don't even remember the last non-Insomniac one. Was it Secret Agent Clank?
Frontal Assault by Insomniac.
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yeah.
What about All for One?
Yeah.
That was Insomniac.
I know it was a tower defense game,
and
so
All
for One
was
also developed by Insomniac.
I feel like it's trying to be like Sony's answer to Mario.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think they don't know what to do with it right now, especially after Future.
They don't know what to do with it out of their franchises, which is why my my thoughts is for them to kind of focus on making some of their franchises important and not just trying to throw them all out there and make there's a reason for that. As for Nintendo, honestly, my advice to them would be expansion. I don't know if they expand the Japanese studios, they form a studio in Europe, they expand retro, they open up a new American studio. But they can't afford to have a repeat of the N64 here. They have good games, they make good games, but people aren't going to sit around and expect a game every 2 months anymore. That just isn't how we're both anymore. And they aren't getting much third-party support, so they need studios that can fill in the void. And it doesn't have to be major games. They just have to be good games. You can have, you know, like have a 30-man team work on a new IP or something like that, or, you know, make a sports game because you really are acting in that department, or a shooter, which you're also acting in.
Mario and Luigi Brothers, like those RPGs, because I actually really like those.
Those are fun, but, I mean, you know, they run into that problem where if you release too many Mario games, people complain.
Right.
So they do need
but
to
I
kind
mean,
of...
But, I mean, they already do that, though, so... Would it really matter that much?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things because the people who say that are probably people who aren't going to support them anyhow. It's just another reason not to. But I do think, especially being that they just released Paper Mario and Mario and Luigi back-to-back within the last year, that they will probably take a break from that, especially being that those aren't merely big studios. That said... They either need to do that or they need to do what they did with like Platinum and partner up with people to bring games to their platforms, exclusive games. I always think the notion of people telling them that they need to pay a Rockstar to bring GTA 5 to consoles is just stupid because at the end of the day, you're going to lose more money than you make, really. It's going to be on the system, but how many people are not going to buy it on the 360 and the PS3 because it's on the Wii U?
Right. I feel like that was one of the problems that I had with the Wii U starting out because like half the lineup was stuff that had been out for like a year or like up to a year. It's like,
that's the problem I still have with the PS Vita. I mean, if a large majority of your library are ports, why would I buy it?
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a problem with
games, but they're still ports at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be an issue that Microsoft and Sony faces this holiday season as well. There's a lot of the major games that they have are games that you can get on your PS3 and your 360, and I don't know how many parents are going to be interested in a $400 or $500 investment this holiday season for mostly games that you can get on systems you probably already have based on numbers.
Now, I feel like the PS4 still has like the edge starting out,
simply because people might not take Microsoft at their word when they say that all the anti-consumer and the DRM stuff got taken off.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't even think that's Microsoft's biggest problem to me, and I haven't really seen this brought up, but I know friends who have this friend, I have the same thing, is I really want Microsoft systems to be on the market for a while to see if we get a repeat of the Red Ring of Doom. Because they had a terrible failure rate for the first, like, half of this generation.
I think three of my Xboxes had to be sent away.
One of my Xboxes got E74.
I had to send away my Xbox 4 times. It eventually broke down, and I just replaced it this past summer.
How sad is it that three of us in completely different parts of North America are all bitching about how many times we had to send our Xbox away?
Right.
As
right.
If more than once.
It's like, I bet you that still runs through, like, a lot of people's minds, even, like, people who are still, who've just gotten, like, new Xboxes for the first time. You have to wonder if that goes to their minds or if, like, anyone has told them about that.
Oh, well.
Well, I think, I mean, it was a huge thing. I had friends who would, throughout this entire generation, were like, I want to get a 360, but I'm afraid of it breaking down on me.
Right.
And, you know, it's a really, it's, because there was never a point, I think, until maybe recently, where you could say, oh, you don't have to worry, you can buy it. Because
now you just have to worry about, they just have to worry about your connection dropping.
But that's a less of a problem, I think, than having your system not function at all. I think it's a huge mark on their records, and I really think people want to. I would advise people to wait it out. And to be fair, I would say the same thing about Sony, because while it wasn't as high, the other side of Doom was just as big of a problem this generation. I mean, I had to replace my PS3 for it as well, and I've had several friends and my older brother who had to do that as well.
Well, not even that. You have to wonder if people are going to worry about their credit card information getting hacked again, like 2011.
Yeah, well, both of them had hacking problems. I think, you know, like, people didn't report on the hardware side of the PS3. People didn't report on Microsoft's excessive hacking. Because the PSN thing never had an issue with me. I've had my Xbox account hacked twice.
Really?
And, yeah. There was some type of exploit with FIFA and EA servers or something like that, which is really weird because I've never owned a FIFA game a day in my life. But apparently, if you played an EA game on the system, there was a workaround. Lucky enough for me, I don't have my credit card stored on any of these accounts. But the person just drained my account of any Microsoft points I had, which at the time was like $20 worth, I think.
Oh.
And Microsoft, while they're exploring this, they cancel you. You can't use your Xbox Live account for about a month and a half. Why they investigate this? So yeah, they have
really?
Pretty bad. Yeah, it was.
Why do you need to turn off your Xbox account to?
Because they're investigating it to make sure it's not like you who did it and trying to get free money off of them or something. I don't know why they have to turn off, or maybe they want to make sure the person doesn't have access to it anymore.
Well, okay, I guess. But I mean, couldn't they figure out a way to like trace it from the original IP that you bought that you used the Xbox on and make sure that like if it's in a certain mile distance apart from the one that you originally bought it off of, wouldn't that be a way to isolate it?
I have no idea. I just know what I went through. But yes, that is next gen. I guess one final question as we begin to wrap, and I think Trent already answered this, but are either one of you getting any of these systems this year? Or any of the systems if you don't have a Wii U?
Xbox One, not until either the price goes down or there's something that looks interesting on it. Because right now, nothing about it looks
like worth
spending.
I honestly feel like both the Xbox One and the PS4 don't have that great of launches. Like, I would like to play Knack, and I would probably play Killzone, but I don't feel like the launch lineup on the PS4 is that much stronger than the Xbox One's.
I think the Xbox One has a stronger launch lineup. But
really?
That's me.
You think so?
Well, I mean, it has Killzone and Knack versus, I think, Rise. I mean, Rise, I think, is a game that's going to sell well because it looks nice. Dead Rising's always been an interesting franchise.
Dead Rising is going to fail.
I think Rise is going
to
fail. Have you seen some of the
it looks
on
terrible.
Rise recently?
I don't mean Ryzook's like a good game. I mean Ryzook's good.
Right, I know. But one of the write-ups for Ryze,
the Game Informer.
Yeah, he says wanted to. You know what's my problem? He said he wanted to leave for after like 10 minutes. Like,
I absolutely believe that Ryze would be a. I absolutely believe that Ryze would be a bad game, but Ryze is a game that you can sell in a commercial because it looks like it plays good.
It looks like a series of QuickTime events to me, Earl.
Exactly. My point is that you could put that in a commercial, make, oh, this is in the game, and it looks cool. But I'm not defending the gameplay itself. I'm saying that it's a game that's going to sell well because it looks good. You know, beauty, what is it, style over substance?
Yeah. As far as Killzone for PS4, I think that the franchise has always been good but not great. And I think that having them, like, help introduce the lineup may end up working out in the long term.
I think in the long term, both of them have interesting lineups. I just think that the long term is a very long time from now. Because even post launch, like, we have, what, Titanfall, we have Destiny in the first half of next year, we have that really weird Metal Gear Solid demo, prologue, Ground Zero thing, and that's pretty much it right now for, like, the first 4 months of the year.
And then, like, 6 months from now is when things get really interesting.
Yes, and that's, you know, and by then, as Trent says, hopefully you get a full working system that has all of its kinks ironed out.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of mentioned this earlier about some of the stuff that the PS4 won't have, like, was it MP3 support or whatever? Did either of you guys really use any of that at all?
I think some of that is just internet making everything, you know, the sky's falling. It's not a big deal to a huge portion of the people, but it is a deal, so people make it out to be something major. Like, I've used custom soundtracks, I think, twice in my life. And that was once on my Xbox and a couple of times on my Wii for X-like Truck.
I actually did miss the custom soundtracks. That was pretty cool, but it's not, like, a super big deal-breaker.
Most games have good enough music that I don't need a custom soundtrack, and I don't play the type of games that usually require, like, racing games or sports games. But, yeah, I think it's time for us to wrap it up. Check out the website. We've been doing in addition to this podcast, we've been doing our Dual World and Games of the Generation series. We've counted down the top 7 Xbox 360 games, the top 7 PS3 games, the top new franchises, the top most influential games of the generation. We've done a similar discussion like this on this week's show, so check that all out. Check out my review of Batman Arkham Origins up on the site. Trent will have a fun discussion about Thanksgiving this week. Check out, I know it's November, but check out his reviews of underrated horror films. Some great picks in there, including his favorite Trick or Treat. This week for November, we're going to do a Thanksgiving type celebration for the site, and for 151 proof movies, which for us means we're watching movies that we loved watching the first time and got really wasted to. So we're kicking that off with Tekken, which I thought was a good idea until I remember we have a new rule on the site where we take this out anytime the movie's name is mentioned in the movie. And Tekken, the first time we did it has a spoken rule whenever they say Tekken because it's the name of the tournament, and that got us pretty drunk to begin with, so I can't imagine that with shots. So I'm going to find a workaround to cheat the system that way. So check that out. If I'm alive on Saturday, I'll let you know. Comic book reviews are up on Wednesday as usual. We have Green Arrow, we have Swamp Thing, we have Forever Evil 3, some Marvel comics, which I probably should know the name of, but I don't read enough Marvel comics to get that. So yeah, check that all out. We're going to have articles, not necessarily about next gen. I really don't want to get into the piss and match. I'll wait until the systems are out and we actually have games on our hands for all of that. You can find Justin on Twitter at Gigawatt Conduit, which I'm surprised he didn't mention when he talked about Infamous.
What?
And is it that where your name comes from?
Oh, yeah. Just a little bit, but it's no big deal.
And you can find Trent at InstaTrent, I guess, like the ramen. And you can find me at ER_NOTR, which is why I guess Trent prefers that I have a simpler name. But whatever. So for Trent, Justin, and myself, this has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 150.
6%. You can't hold on.